Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine conflict, sanctions. The U.S. government for more than 2 years now has used sanctions to inhibit in some fashion the Russian war machine. This month, the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, announced new sanctions especially directed against banks in Russia and banks that might be doing business with Russia. But there's so much more, and I can not possibly accommodate all of the details in a new report by Max Mislich of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He's at the Center on Economic and Financial Power Russia program for the foundation. He's a senior research analyst. And this language here is very specialized, but that's what Max does. So I call him in for help. Max, a very good evening to you. Thanks for this. This is the Treasury Department, not Commerce, Treasury Department. And we're talking about following up an executive order that the president signed at the end of December 2023, sanctioning individuals and institutions. What is the big picture here? Why this announcement now? What are they looking to stop or interrupt? Or in some fashion, start fresh with sanctions against entities that were left out before. Good evening to you, Max.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here with you. To your point, the sanctions have been in place for quite some time since Russia's most recent incursion into Ukraine. And what happened earlier this month on June 12th was an action by the president to essentially expand the scope of existing sanctions so that entities designated under a particular executive order will now be considered part of Russia's military industrial base. And that goes to the heart of what the United States is trying to focus on in its campaign against Russia. Russia has expanded all elements of its state economy to pursue its military ambitions. And as such, the United States is expanding the scope of its sanctions programs to include aspects of Russians designated subjects to expand the scope of possible secondary sanctions for foreign banks dealing with them.
Yes, as I understand it, Russia's gone to everything for the front, all defense industries. They have a manpower shortage. They're working 24/7. However, this particular list of sanctions looked very targeted at the banks. VTB Bank is mentioned in your report and Spur Bank. What does that mean to go after the banks, to shut them down, to cut them out of the international money system? How does it work, Max?
Right. So these were banks that had already been designated by OFAC at a previous time. But essentially what's being done now, as I mentioned before, there's an expanded definition of what it constitutes Russia's military defense industrial base. And so to the point about VTB Bank and Spur Bank, essentially this action makes it so that foreign financial institutions, foreign banks that might be dealing with VTB Bank or Spur Bank could be subject to secondary sanctions themselves because those two financial institutions are now considered part of Russia's military industrial defense base.
So no matter what the business is you're doing, because the banks are considered like manufacturing weapons, then you can be sanctioned for doing business, despite you claim that all we're dealing with here is lawn furniture, but that is no longer going to be an acceptable defense. Is that correct, Max?
Yeah, there's some general licenses that the Treasury Department issued in coordination with this announcement. And so there are certain sectors, certain types of transactions which would be authorized. Humanitarian aid, for instance. Notably, energy payments are also included. So there could be payments made pursuant to certain energy dealings, and those would not constitute violations pursuant to this sanctions program.
You mentioned banks in China, India, and in Hong Kong. Are they vulnerable? Are they frightened by this? Oh, not frightened, the wrong word. Do they pay attention with this, the idea of secondary sanctions?
They absolutely do. You can see that there are major financial institutions in China, for instance, that have been slowly moving away from dealing with Russia over the course of this conflict. Even smaller banks that operate on the border are vulnerable to secondary sanctions. Of course, they might have fewer connections to the Western financial system, which would make them less. Let's put it this way: less susceptible to feeling the shocks of having a secondary sanction placed on them, but it could still be impactful.
It's especially helpful for you to elicit here your recommendations of what else needs to be done. You want oversight, and that means people, or does that mean systems?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of a trope in D.C. Where I'm located to say that we need more resources, right, more funding to solve a problem. But in this instance, you know, I used to work at OFAC in the licensing division and then later in the enforcement division. And there is an under-resourced element to this where you have too few people engaged in actual designations, too few people engaged in the investigations of violations, and too few people engaged in coordination across the interagency. So much of my recommendation does come down to we need more personnel. We need to have more resources for the sanctions administering bodies. And as well, we need to have more resources for advanced detection capabilities so that we can actually identify evasion, particularly in the maritime domain where a lot of these ship-to-ship transfers occur.
Yeah, that got my attention. I like this because this feels like science fiction. I'll read what you write. Investing in advanced technologies such as artificial intelligence-enabled ship-to-ship transfer detection capabilities. Translate that, Max. What's that mean?
Yeah, there's a researcher, and I'm forgetting his name, but I read a report that he essentially used a combination of satellite imagery, some AIS tracking, which is essentially the transponder on ships at sea that keep their location publicly accessible, and artificial intelligence tools. And he used those three to essentially identify instances when ships have turned off their tracking and are likely to be engaged in illicit ship-to-ship transfers, potentially involving weapons or oil. And you know, these are technologies that that deserve a lot of attention from the U.S. government and our allies in order to actually identify instances when evasion is occurring.
That is cool. You can track the Earth. Eventually, we'll get to tracking the solar system. Now, one more thing. You worked at OFAC, which is the Office of Foreign Assets Control. You need more people. You need more resources. You need more investigators. What's the priority, Max?
With respect to designations, it comes down to manpower and policy, right? So if you want to have more sophisticated network analysis of evasions, you're going to need to hire more investigators to do the groundwork, work within the intelligence community and all sources of information that's accessible to them to identify those patterns of evasion and ultimately designate those individuals and entities. At the same time, critically important is having the right policy in place that actually supports those designations. And you can see as we go through towards the presidential election, it would appear to me that the policy does not necessarily support more aggressive designations in certain domains because there's a concern about energy pricing with respect to oil.
So right now, more boots on the ground would help. Max, just a detail here. When you're OFAC, do you get a cool badge to show when you're doing an investigation?
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised when I joined that. Yeah, I had a badge. It was great.
And so you show that badge and they open the door. Is that it?
Yeah, you know, generally a lot of people don't know what OFAC is or who you are. And so they could be a little curious. Sometimes
sure.
You have to walk through the door with an FBI agent and they're more aware of who those folks are.
Max Meisler, Senior Research Analyst, Center on Economic and Financial Power, Foundation for Defensive Democracies. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.